listening to The Worried Writer, helping you to overcome fear, self-doubt, and procrastination to get the work done. I'm your host, Sarah Painter, and I'm a novelist and self-confessed worried writer. For show notes, resources, and much more, please head to worriedwriter.com. And now, on with the show. Welcome to episode 5 of The Worried Writer. My guest today is best-selling author of romantic comedy, Annie Lyons. Annie's latest novel, Life or Something Like It, is out on Monday. For people listening in the future, I'm recording this on Wednesday the 10th of July 2015, so Annie's book is out on the 13th of July. I spoke to Annie last month, and when I was editing the interview this week, I was reminded of what a lovely time I'd had speaking to her. We talk about pre-publication nerves, writing routines, and Annie's slightly unusual route to publication. Okay, I'll just give you guys a quick writing update. I just finished the revisions of a novella, which will be coming out later this year. I haven't actually signed the contract for it yet, so I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say, but I'll update you as soon as I can. Now that's done, I'm getting back to writing the second draft of my work in progress. I'm having to force myself to work on it, to be honest, as another idea is knocking on the door and demanding to be written. I know, though, that I have to put the shiny new idea to one side and get the current book into a decent enough shape to send to my agent. Otherwise, I'm just never going to finish it. If you find that you get shiny new idea syndrome when you're trying to finish a book, I recommend making a few notes on the new idea, just something so that you can then put it to one side and get back to work on the main project. My other top tip today is about measuring progress. I firmly believe that what gets measured gets done, and this year I've been using a Plannerisms planner, which is a physical softcover notebook rather than a piece of software, and it shows you a weekly view as well as having planning sections for each month. In the weekly view, there's a column at the beginning where I jot down the things I want to do regularly, like writing, walking, social media, yoga. Then I put a tick, or I put the number of miles walked or words written, in the daily columns. In the month view, which is a grid calendar, I give myself stickers for different goals met, such as 1,000 words, and so on. That probably sounds a bit nuts, maybe over the top, but it's really, really helped me to up my productivity and to stay on track this year. I'll put a link to the Plannerisms planner in the show notes, just in case you're interested, but really you could use any sort of diary or calendar. I definitely recommend nice stickers, though. Just before we get to the interview section, I want to give a quick thank you to everyone who has been sharing, subscribing, listening, and talking about the podcast. I really appreciate it. Here's a quick shout out to some folk from Twitter for their lovely comments. Karen Ross, who's at Comedy Karen, Neil Doran, Wayne Kelly, who's at Mr. Kelly to you, Tansy Bradshaw, who's at Tansy Jean, Ros Morris, and Louisa Heaton. Thanks so much. If you enjoy the show and want to support it, please consider leaving a rating on iTunes or signing up for the mailing list at worriedwriter.com. I want to make this as useful as possible, so if you've got a question you'd like answered, please get in touch. You can email me at sarah@worriedwriter.com or find me on Twitter at Sarah R. Painter. And now, on to the interview section of the show. My guest today is Annie Lyons. Annie and I both signed with Carina at around the same time, and her debut novel, Not Quite Perfect, came out a month after mine. We got chatting online and have shared the highs and lows of being newly published authors. Not Quite Perfect became a bestseller, and Annie followed it with Dear Lizzie and a novella, Not Quite Perfect Christmas. Annie's new novel, Life or Something Like It, is published next week. Welcome to the show, Annie, and thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Sarah. It's very exciting. I love it.
It's really great. Nice to speak to you, finally, after chatting for a couple of years. And just before we dig into the interview, I just want to do a quick apology for my voice today. I have a horrible cold, and I may have to blow my nose periodically. So that's something to look forward to. So congratulations on the imminent publication of your third novel. Would you be able to just tell the audience a little bit about it?
thank you very much. So Life or Something Like It. It's the story of Cat Nightingale, and I would describe her as something of a reluctant heroine. For a start, she's very happy with her life. She's at the peak of her career. She works in celebrity PR, and she runs a company with her best friend and long-term crush, Jesse Hemingway. And she loves the high-powered life. She loves the glamour of it all. And she's decided that she doesn't need a man. She doesn't want children. You know, she's very happy in her world. And she definitely doesn't want to be swept off her feet. That's basically Kat. However, a PR launch with one of her top clients, who is a bit of a bad boy footballer, goes disastrously wrong. And she has to step back from her job for a time. But this happens around the time that her brother, her beloved brother, needs someone to look after his two children. And they are 10 and 6 years old, Charlie and Ellie. And so she's just thrown into this messy and chaotic world. And is kind of forced to look at her life in a slightly different way, shall we say. Uh-huh. We're both mothers, we know how that
works.
I was
just going to say, I can imagine. Yes. Well, that sounds lots of fun.
Yes, it was lots of fun to write. I do like writing children because they're good fun to write.
And you write them really well.
Well, thank you very much.
I really enjoyed the family in Not Quite Perfect. Really good.
Thanks.
And as I mentioned in the introduction, we were published at around the same time. My debut was actually the fourth novel that I'd completed, which, you know, I know is not unusual. I'd gotten a close but no cigar moment with my second book, but ultimately my agent at the time couldn't place it. Was your path to publication similarly tricky, or was it smooth?
Yeah, it wouldn't it be nice if it was smooth? I don't think anyone's path to publication is smooth. There's always a story, isn't there? A good story behind every path. And mine started in 2008. I just had my second child, my son, Alfie, and I decided that I needed to re-engage my brain a little. So I did a creative writing course and went along to this fabulous adult education center and met all sorts of different people who were doing these courses. It was great. And our teacher, she was brilliant. She was very, she liked to use different things to help us develop stories. And she used the Mills and Boone Harlequin good practices in storytelling, because they have, you go on their website and they have structures there that you can sort of use to help you plot a story. And so I started playing around with an idea which would then go on to become Not Quite Perfect, and I got made redundant in 2009, and I thought, I'm going to give this writing a go. I'm going to try this. I'm going to see if I can finish a novel. And and I did, and I showed it to a friend of mine who was also an agent, and she tried to find a home for it. And similar to you, I got lots of we love this, but women's fiction is really tricky at the moment, and we've got too many similar authors. Uh-huh. And 5 years ago, you would have been published, and all that kind of thing.
Oh, it's so familiar.
You go, that's great, but you're not going to send me a royalty check now, are you? This is not happening. So I gave up eventually for a bit and wrote another book, which is actually still languishing on my hard drive, but it's waiting for the right moment. It's going to happen, I'm sure. So I wrote the second book, and I kept drawing blanks, and I nearly gave up. And I had what my husband still refers to as the meltdown, which was a very, it was quite an ugly evening of me throwing cushions around and having a little bit of I basically became a 2-year-old again, and this is never going to happen, and was completely discouraged. And then somebody said to me, you should go on LinkedIn. It's really good. There's loads of publishing people there, and you could find contacts and talk to people. And I got in touch with Jenny Hutton, who was an editor at Mills and Boone. She is now the fabulous and very successful best-selling author Jenny Oliver. And she was lovely, and she said, I remember reading this book, it was great, but it wasn't right for our mirror list. So Harlequin are setting up this digital first publisher called Karina. And I think it'd be perfect for them. Would you like me to recommend it? Would you like me to put it forward? They would love it. And I said, yes, please. That would be great if you could.
Oh, go on then. And,
yeah, all right then. See, twist my arm. And
then
3 months later, Not Quite Perfect was published. It was so quick. It came out and then, yeah.
That's one of the advantages of the digital imprint is the speed with which it can move.
Turn it around so quickly.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very exciting. So it was very exciting going from giving up to saying I'm published. It was, I thought, what just happened?
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that story. That's brilliant. Yeah.
Get there in the end. That should encourage people. You can get there in the end.
I don't know about you, but you had a meltdown. So I had a similar sort of dark moment where I did think, well, this is it. I'm just going to be the close but no cigar girl. I'm just going to get a T-shirt made that says almost, but not quite.
You've got matching ones.
Yes. And I did start to think, you know, when I was feeling quite low about it, I did start to think, well, okay, maybe that's just it for me. Maybe that's just my story. Mm. It's going to be all that time. You know, I did give it a go.
Yeah.
You know, quite a good go. I got close. And it was very difficult. I mean, we're joking about having that moment and thinking about giving up. But what do you think made you give it one more go? Or did you tell yourself, this is just one more go? I'm just going to try one more thing and then I really am hanging up my hat? Or,
well, I think actually it was a combination of my husband, who is possibly one of the most understanding men in the world, who was just, he just kept saying to me, but you can write. People have told you can write. This went to the big six publishers. Yeah. They, you know, some people didn't like it, but most of them did. So, you've got something. And that sort of drove me on. And actually, I went to a party that was, it was a leaving party for somebody I used to work with. And it had been quite a difficult time after I got made redundant. It made me doubt myself quite a lot and what I wanted to do and, you know, what was next. And I met a girl there who I should probably get in contact with and say thank you, because she was the one who said to me, you should get on LinkedIn, you should try that avenue and try and make contacts, keep going. And I think you got to push yourself on, you've got to keep trying other avenues, because there are so many routes to publication these days. You know, it's not just I'm going to buy the Writers and Artists Handbook and find an agent. You can self-publish, you can go to, you know, Karina, take manuscripts that, you know, you can just send them in, unsolicited manuscripts, that's the word I was looking for. You know, so there are lots of different routes. So I think if one person tells you that you can write, one person who's possibly not married to you or loves you deeply and wants to be nice to you all the time, somebody says to you, you can write, and you know you can do it, but it's not for them, because it's very subjective, isn't it? You know, not everyone's going to like your writing.
It is.
So keep going, you know, just keep trying.
That's very good advice, that they're getting some external opinions so that you can, as you say, you've got something to hold on to in those sort of difficult times when it is hard to keep going. I know my husband is very similar to yours, just ridiculously supportive. Yeah. And he would just keep on saying to me again, exactly that. You know that you can do this because you've got these people who know what they're talking about.
Mm.
You can write. It's just luck of what's going on in the market, what's going on in the publishing. That's external. If you keep going, it's going to happen.
Definitely.
And that was very valuable.
Someone like David Gray, the singer, and his first album went nowhere. Nobody was interested in it at the time. And then he waited, I think, 5 years, maybe even longer. And then it was the right time for him. And then it became huge, you know, and that was... It's, you've got to try and hit it at the right moment, you know, that's the thing.
You have to bear in mind, don't you, that there are those issues of timing which are no reflection on your own worth as a writer.
Definitely.
And another thing that my husband recommended that I do, and every so often when I'm having a nosedive of confidence, which, you know, happens quite a lot. Yeah. He'll say to me, have you done that file that I said you should do? Which is such a good idea, and I really must do it. And he suggested that I copy and paste or cut up or whatever all the great comments that I've had. So back before I was published, it was when I was looking for my fabulous agent. Yes. And, you know, that's also a journey. You know, you submit to agents and, you know, you will get some rejections. And when I was feeling low then, he'd say, yes, but have you copied all of the lovely comments that you've had from agents or from your writing partners? Or copy them into a document. When you're feeling down, you look through that and you remind yourself, this is the external, this is the external reality of your writing, not the sort of negative thoughts that you're having.
I think that's a really brilliant idea.
And now he sort of...
You just want to make it into a quilt. Yeah. Get them printed out, make it into something you can...
Touch.
You could, like, wrap yourself in
yes.
it.
Yes. The healing words.
My worry blanket. Yeah, yes. I love that.
A massive collage, just to have it over the front of your house.
Well, my best friend, it's actually up there. And I know we're not, no, people can't see us, but you can. It's up. My friend, my best friend, made me for my 40th birthday a 40 fabulous reviews for a fabulous 40-year-old.
Well,
and it's
all
the reviews
are.
For Not Quite Perfect.
Oh, brilliant.
And she put that up there and she did this beautiful thing. She designed it all. She gave it to me, the words, this took flipping ages, so I hope you like it. I said, I really do. I did. I cried, obviously. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful thing, you know, and that's nice to have that in your writing room to sort of remind you, or your writing space, to remind you that this is what you've done. But you're right. Anything from along the way where somebody said, mm-hmm. this is great, you should try this, or is really useful.
I do love that idea. Again, my husband had said with good reviews, you know, he sends me particularly nice quotes from reviews because I don't read reviews.
Oh,
so have you. I don't read reviews, but my husband reads them for me and he will send me particularly nice ones or quotes.
Yes.
And he does keep saying you must collate them all so that, you know, you can have a look through them. But yes, your friend, what a lovely present.
I know. That's
good.
One of my best presents ever, you know.
So nice. Yeah. So nice. Because we do need it, don't we? We need the boost.
We do need the boost. Mm. Because you spend so much time on your own, I mm-hmm. think, living in your own head, which if your head's like mine, that can be quite a chaotic place, and
definitely.
Slightly, yeah, the self-doubts creep in, you know.
Do you read your reviews?
To start with, I did.
I do,
because they were, you know, most of them are really lovely, but again, occasionally you get, it's like driving past an accident. You can't help but look, you know. It's a sort of, the one-star reviews, some of them are can be a bit mean, and the way people phrase things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think people don't, if you were sitting in front of them, they wouldn't say that.
No, gosh, no.
I find that a bit, but I think you just have to let it go. Mm-hmm. I just think you have to move away from it, because you can't please everyone, and they're entitled to their opinion. They
of
are
course.
Entitled mm-hmm. to it, even mm-hmm. if it makes you
sad.
You know, a little bit sad, yes. Bad reviews can be useful as well, because if somebody says, like in Not Quite Perfect, one of the things that people said was, well, I don't think this Lily, the character Lily, I don't think she would talk like that. She's supposed to be 3 or 4. Well, she's 4, you know, she was 4. So she wouldn't talk like that. She talks like a teenager. Well, the thing is, I took a lot of inspiration from my own kids, and they did, but that was in my mind. I thought, a few people said that, so maybe that's valid. Maybe I need to, you know, thinking about making characters a bit older so that the dialogue works, because it's nice to put funny words in a, you know, in the character's mouth and make the children say, you know, they do say brilliant things, but it has to be realistic. So, you know, I think you can learn a lot from your reviews as well. But just don't try not to take them too.
That's very mature of you. I'm just going to carry on hiding.
I have occasional moments of maturity. Actually, one thing that my editor said as well, she said, well, go and look at Pride and Prejudice and look at the one-star reviews. It will make you feel better. And I think if you find your favourite writer and a book that you love above all else, and you find a one-star review, it can make you feel a bit better because you think this is a good club to be in, you know, where we will get them. So
that's a really good idea. I shall do that.
Yes. It does help.
So we've mentioned that we're both mothers, both parents. So we, like me, you juggle. I always find that this phrase is a bit strange. We juggle motherhood with writing. That sounds very odd, but you know what I mean.
Yes, I do know what you mean.
But now my children are older now. So it really feels like the perfect career now. But when they were very wee, it was quite tricky. I mean, I was a freelance writer before I was a novelist, although I was, you know, still writing fiction for fun. Mm-hmm. So I've been freelance and combining that with parenthood for a long time, 14 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, as I say, it's much easier now. How do you find it?
You know, in a weird way, I found it easier to write when they were smaller, just because I had short bursts of time, which is very concentrated, and I was fitting it round naps or their naps, not mine, mm-hmm. and episodes of Peppa Pig, you know, and mm-hmm. having more time sometimes makes me weirdly less productive because there's so much more to distract me. But I have good days and bad days. So some days I'm more disciplined than others, usually when I've got a deadline looming, of course. But we moved house last year, and this is my proper writing room now, which with my Buzz Lightyear stickers is very left by the last inhabitant. But so I can hide away in here, although, and that's great. In, you know, when the kids are at school, I can do that and fit that in. That's fine. But if I need to do some when the kids are around, my son does tend to barge in and start telling me something about Liverpool or, you know, Raheem Sterling is definitely leaving Liverpool and isn't this awful mum? Stuff that I really need to know at that moment. So, but that's good as well. I think that keeps me grounded. And I love writing about children in my books. So, you know, no prizes for guessing where I get the inspiration.
So you get the material while you're being distracted.
Yes, absolutely. He'll say something. Often my son will say something, my daughter as well. They'll say, and I think, right, I need to write that down because that could be great. That could be a really good scene, I think. We could work with that. I do confess to them now as well that I'm using... Do you mind if I use your words?
You have to when they're older, don't you? I do that as well. I have to say, oh, actually, can I use that?
Yeah, absolutely. I bet that's, now with teenagers, I bet that's more, like when they're smaller, they think, yeah, this is quite cool that mum's a writer and I'm in a book. But as they get older, they might be talking, you know, intellectual property rights, you might be...
Well, my daughter's a writer as well, so she's written two novels. So
that's brilliant.
Which I'm so proud. I'm so proud. But
that's amazing.
Also, her word count, though, yes, I'm hugely proud, as you can tell, but also it's quite humbling because she'll write, you know, a couple of thousand words and she, you know, she did NaNoWriMo, you know, and wrote 50,000 words in a month. And my writing's quite slow.
Yes,
so, you know, 1,000 words is a good day for me. And so then she was just like clocking up these amazing word counts. And I was going, well done, darling. Oh, gosh.
Oh, I'm starting to hate
I'm
that.
I'm so rubbish.
Did she say, oh, come on, Mum, get on with it. You can do it.
A little bit, I guess. I mean, she's just lovely. Yeah, she's just lovely. So she's really supportive and great. And we can talk about writing and talk about story structure together and things. So I'm really lucky.
Yeah, that's good. My daughter, she's the same. She loves Jacqueline Wilson. And she's an absolute book fiend. And she writes really well. And I think you're only 10 and you write that well already.
That's brilliant. So were you a complete, you're probably going to say yes, were you a book fiend when you were growing up?
Yeah, my mum and dad really, you know, turned me on to books and I've always loved books. I've always worked in books as well. I started off as a bookseller and then worked in publishing and now I'm a writer. So I've never been far away from books. But yes, I'm just woefully slow at reading. I just wish I was one of those... I'm either book bloggers so much because they're just how they get through books so quickly and
amazing.
Voraciously read. I wish I was a person who could just read a book in a day, but it does take me a bit of time. But yeah, I
can read quite quickly, though I have slowed down a bit. I think that might be age tiredness. I don't know. All of the above.
Yes.
But another thing that I really admire with the book bloggers, apart from the speed that they read things, is to then to be able to come up with a, you know, their coherent opinion about the book, or to summarize it and to talk about it a little bit. Because Absolutely. My brain, my memory is dreadful. I'll read a book and it'll have fallen, the plot will have fallen out of my head. I'll probably remember that I loved it, or I'll remember some amazing bit of dialogue or a character that I adored.
Yeah.
But to actually put that into a coherent article, it's not a skill I possess, and I admire it hugely. And
I can write about six sentences saying, I really love this book because this. It's a bit like being back at school.
Book report.
But yeah, they are fantastic. So and very supportive as well.
Oh, absolutely. No, very lucky. I mean, the writing community as a whole, the book world as a whole, I was just going to say, you know, you worked in publishing, so I hope that this was true when you were working in publishing, but my experience on the periphery, and now slightly more in it, I suppose, is that book people are just lovely. You know, they're really
book
supportive.
People are good people, definitely. You share that love of reading. I think you do. It's unique. There's nothing else like it. And yeah, it is a lovely community, definitely.
Was it good for you to have worked in publishing before you started to pursue publishing yourself?
I would say so. I think I know quite a lot about how it works, particularly from the retail side, because I worked in, I was a head of sales, worked for Egmont, which was children's publishing, slightly different from the adult world. But it definitely gives you an insight into how it works, the kind of nuts and bolts of it all. So I tend not to get too worried about things, and I know how retailers work, and I know if things don't happen immediately, that's okay. And you know, I understand a bit about the editorial process as well, because I work quite a lot with editors and designers and things. I think that is quite helpful, although it changes so quickly. And it's been, you know, it's nearly 6 years since I left. So the bookselling landscape has changed hugely.
Gosh, yes. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, but it is useful to have that always in the back of mind.
Definitely. And I was going to ask you, I'm jumping around here because I just realised that we were talking about writing and parenthood, and you mentioned how actually having more time can be tricky. And I found exactly the same thing when I suddenly had this expanse of the school day. And I found it didn't translate immediately and magically into a productive, wonderful word count. So do you have a typical writing day, or do you have any anything that you have tried to help give you sort of structure and to make you more productive on?
Well, I do try to follow the structure of, you know, I think I listened to your interview with Julie Cohn, and I think she was similar. It was all like, we've all got the 3 o'clock cutoff point. That's the time we're supposed to be leaving. I try to work Monday to Friday because I do feel that it is a job like any other, and you do need time downtime as well, and also you want to see your family, you know, you need to spend time with your loved ones. But I think I feel quite lucky because it is a job you can fit around the school run. So I will drop the kids at school, come home, make coffee, which I feel is a very important part of the writing process, almost the most important part. And then I'll do a couple of chores, and then I'll start to write by 10 o'clock at the latest. And then I've got this theory that I write best during the first two cups of coffee of the day, but I'm not sure if that's true. That's what I tell myself. I think, oh God, it's caffeine hit, and I'm going to just ride this wave of creativity. It doesn't always happen. I try to write till lunchtime, which is a literally movable feast. It can be any time between 11:30 if I'm really hungry and 2 o'clock. And then after lunch, I do correspondence and social media, and then leave at the magic 3 o'clock. And in my head, I would love to be writing correspondence and then have some reading time. But it just doesn't, realistically, it never happens. So, you know, but we're very lucky, I think, to have it. I'm much better when I've got a deadline. If I'm writing in the middle of a book, in between books, I tend to find it a little bit, I think, well, I should get that sorted on Facebook. I should do that on my my internet site, or, you know, I should sort this out and sort that out. But it's yeah, I float a little bit more.
Mm.
But I think you've got to try and be disciplined with your writing time. So, you know.
Absolutely. All of that is frighteningly familiar to me.
Yes. And that's very reassuring.
I definitely have exactly the same intended routine.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm getting better. I don't know about you, but I'm certainly getting better at it because, you know, there are good days and bad days, but I think.
Definitely. Writing this book, I felt I got more into the swing of it, but I think it's because it was my fourth book I'd written, and I felt, I sort of thought, I think I might know what I'm doing now.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, I don't know. I don't
it's
know.
Exciting.
Out loud. Maybe I shouldn't say that out loud.
I can cut that. It's okay. We'll pretend you didn't say it.
Let's not be too hasty.
Yeah, speaking of working out what we're doing, I found it really, really hard to write my second published book. I mean, it wasn't my second book, but just the, I don't know how you found it, you know, because suddenly I was actually published now and I was dealing with all of that while also trying to hit quite a tight deadline and write a book from scratch in quite a short time for me. And I felt a huge amount of pressure. I didn't want to let people down.
No, that's true. All your readers. And it's a sort of, what I think you call it, the dreaded second book syndrome.
Yes, like, that's it. Did you have that or with
Dear
Lizzie?
Well, yes, I did. Mm. Because I think, because Not Quite Perfect was finished and it was as it was, it went to the, you know, and they wanted to publish it as it was. And I had, you know, I had some rewrites to do, but not a huge amount. And my second book, Dear Lizzie, second published book, was it was different in tone and feel. It was more of an emotional book because it's about a woman who leaves her sister 12 letters after she dies, and she wants her to open them one a month for a year, and it a bit to help Lizzie sort her life out, really, because she's been struggling over the years. So it's quite difficult to cram laughs into that. I did try, you know, there's the humour of relationships and sisters and the families, you know, that comes out. But it was, I really had to dig quite deep in terms of the emotion, and I did have to rewrite it a couple of times, which I actually found really, really hard. Mm. And I told myself that it's part of the process of becoming a better writer to do that. Actually, Jenny Oliver said to me that, oh, it's, you're making the book better. Rewrites are all about making the book a better book.
Mm.
And I do believe that, but it was really, really hard. But people seem to like it. So I felt, you know, it was completely different in tone, but people seem to enjoy it, you know, in a different way. So that was quite satisfying as well. But yeah, definitely. The second book is just, you've got to sort of steel yourself and get your head down. And
had you had the idea for Dear Lizzie a lot earlier, or did you sort of have to come up with it when you got the contract from Corona?
I was on holiday in Cornwall and I woke up in the middle of the night and I suddenly thought about this idea with the letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's a really good idea for a book. I think, you know, it's more of a concept-driven kind of novel. And I had to go downstairs and start writing about it. I started to write these ideas down and how...
That's a good sign.
Yes, that was good. That doesn't always happen, does it? So no. I thought, this is what I want to do. And I put it to Karina and said, this is what I'd like to do next. And that was in the summer when Not Quite Perfect had just come out. And they said, oh, yeah, we love that idea. We work on that. Show us more. So I thought, right, okay. And then it took a few more goes before it was as they wanted it to be.
Mm.
But I did find with the rewrites, I do, with that, going back to your kind of first book and how you feel when your first book is published, I did struggle with with confidence, actually. I did, you know, even though Not Quite Perfect had been really successful, it had been a bestseller, I wasn't sure how I'd managed it, really. And then if I could do it again,
uh-huh.
You know, people said they loved it and that they liked my story, but I found it quite hard to believe in myself. And I don't know if you get this, but sometimes I just feel like everybody else knows what they're doing.
Oh, yes.
Doing it really well. And I'm just sort of, I've got lucky. I'm like the rookie at the back of the room who got lucky mm-hmm. with this book. And so that was hard with the second book. But I think having editors as good as the editors at Carina
yes.
helped me with that. And they really did. I think they realised that I needed a little bit more time and a bit more advice and input from them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great. And then I started to understand what they needed and what it was that they were getting at.
I mean, how long had it taken you to write Not Quite Perfect? You know, sort of from idea to complete a book.
It got published in 2013. I suppose I first really started thinking about it in 2008. That sounds a long time, doesn't it? 5 years from the first, like, seed of an idea to publication, I guess. But it had been written and then parked for a bit. And, uh-huh. you know, so I suppose it probably took me a good year to actually write it. And I got to that 20,000 words mark and I thought, how am I supposed to write 100,000 words? Or I didn't even know how many words you were supposed to write.
And probably for the best.
When you hand in your 400,000 word manuscript, the publisher goes, "Oh, really? Let's talk about editing."
I just wonder if perhaps with the second book thing, I think it's just sometimes different books take different amounts of rewrites. Different books need different amounts of help, external help. And I don't know if that's what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know if that's an experience thing because we're both fairly early on in our careers, or whether it is just something that happens throughout a career, that throughout a writing life, that some books will just become more fully formed and translate themselves more smoothly through a first or second or third draft, and some will just require a bit more more rewriting and more editorial support. I think that books just vary.
Definitely, and I think it depends on what the tone of the book is as well, because I think what I've realised is the new book is more like Not Quite Perfect in tone. It has its sad moments, but it's fun. Well, I hope it's funny, but it's supposed to be warm and funny in that kind of not quite perfect tone. Whereas Dear Lizzie was very, you know, it was a very sad story of this sister who, you know, dies and leaves her leaves her son. And, you know, that was quite hard to write. And I think you start to realise what your strengths are, or what comes more naturally to you, maybe, because people do move around from genre to genre. You know, like Callie has, obviously, huge success. And I wonder if she thinks maybe she's found... I mean, I would stick with the psychological thrillers, because obviously she is just...
Absolutely, yeah.
She's rocking it with those. So that's... I think you need... You're right, you sort of find your feet. You're writing a book, you need to get the book written, but then you start to think, okay, what kind of writer am I going to be? Which is my genre? Which is my which is the best kind of tone for me? What comes most naturally and flows best, you know?
And which do you enjoy writing? Which world do you like inhabiting as well? That's another thing, because we know that we're going to spend a very long time writing and rewriting this particular book. And so, you know, it's quite nice to be able to think, well, actually, what's going to give me a good time as well.
Definitely. That's very true. You've got to enjoy writing it. I mean, I know that sounds kind of obvious, but I think I like comedy, you know. I like humor in writing, and that's kind of, I like sad writing too, but I do enjoy reading things which give me a giggle, you know. So I enjoy now writing things that are, I try to make people laugh and make people cry, and if I've done that, I feel my work is done in this book, you know. Because that's what life is like, isn't it?
Definitely.
that's for me. That's
so hard to do as well, though. I mean, I love comedy as well. I like a bit of humour in pretty much any book that I'm reading, even if it's coming through with the characters and the dialogue. But it's also, it's so hard to do. I don't know why it's sometimes levelled as a, oh, this was a very easy read, or this was a light read, or this was, you know, a light, funny read, and yes, said in a slightly disparaging way. And I think, well, gosh, but that's so hard to do.
Yeah, you don't always want a book that's like beating you over the head with some issue or other, do you? I mean, that can be very satisfying in itself, if it's pacey and it takes you, you want it to take you on a journey. But if you can have a laugh along the way.
Absolutely.
Well, that's what I like that. You know, that's
so I'm, do you enjoy writing then? You were saying about you've got to enjoy it and so on. And I was agreeing with you, but I just wanted to say that I have always said that I really like having written much more than the actual, which I've always said that. And I think that's partly, again, my lack of confidence. So it is improving slightly. I do enjoy it more now because I feel slightly more confident perhaps than I used to. But I've always said, oh, I enjoy having written.
That's Dorothy Parker said that.
Yes, yes.
I love that. It's brilliant. Yes. Yeah, I think, well, it is. It's like, yeah, definitely. To have completed a book is the most satisfying. Or almost to be in the middle of it, you know, to know and to know where it's going. That's okay. Very satisfying. Thinking, I know what I'm doing. I know where this character's going. I possibly know where they're going to end up. But and I've got a good idea of how it's going to go. Actually, you like Anne Tyler, don't you?
I love Anne Tyler.
Anne Tyler said that her idea of heaven is to have, and you'll be able to relate to this in terms of that, have an 11-year-old daughter. you've been through that. Have a puppy and be halfway through a book and be in the middle of a novel. Uh-huh,
lovely.
I thought, oh, she is so wise. Mm. I think that is probably heaven.
I wanted to say about the not always enjoying the process, because I remember reading someone saying, oh, you know, if you don't like writing, then don't. You're obviously not a writer. You should stop. And so that's why I wanted to clarify that, because that kind of statement, you know, I don't want anyone listening to ever think, oh, I find it really hard, or I don't really enjoy the writing. I'm biting my nails the entire time and staring at a blank page is really hard. And I don't want anyone listening to think for one second that that means that it's not for them. Because I think we go through times, you know, sometimes it's going better. Sometimes, like you say, if you're in the middle and you know what's going on, you know what's going to happen, it can be, you know, quite good. Or I like, personally, I'm not so keen on the middle. I don't plan. I never know what's going to happen. So what I like is getting to the end of a first draft, because then I know it's going to be a book, that there's enough there.
Yes, that is.
You know, that's when I start to think, oh, thank goodness. It's like I breathe a sigh of relief then and think, okay, I've got something to work on now.
You feel slightly exhausted. Mm.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
I think a writer's life is a very idealised life if you're not in it. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
I think that a lot of, it was recently, wasn't it, Bill, people said it was the thing they'd most like to do.
Okay.
And I think it is wonderful, and I'm not going to moan about it, because it is a fabulous life. But it does have, it's like a job like any other in lots of ways. It has good days and bad days, and there's days when you think, there is no way I can do this. I don't know where the story's going. It's I've lost the thread of this. Help me. What do I do?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that you have to acknowledge that part of it as well. But I sort of tell myself that that's all part of the process.
Yes. Yes. Me too.
Yeah.
And do you have ways of, you just saying, you know, you've got to treat it like a job, and you were saying about your routine, you try and stick to Monday to Friday and so on. Do you have any other things you do? Do you set a daily word target or an amount of time that you're going to sit at your desk? Do you have any sort of very practical things that you do to...
I have a very bad back, so I'm not allowed to, I try not to sit for hours and hours and hours, although if you're into it, it's inevitable. So I try to sit and then get up and go and hang out the washing or something, or, you know, do a little job. But I try to, if I can, when I'm writing a novel and I've got a deadline, if I can do 2,000 words in a day, that's a good day, I would say. One day I did 4,000 and I thought, what? There was steam coming off the keyboard. I was like, this is great. And then you can read it and think, oh. But it feels nice when you're really hammering away at the keyboard and getting into that. But yeah, 2000 is, I would say, for me, is
that seems good.
It's a good day's work, yeah. And you do calculate, you do think, oh, I've got to get it to the publisher by that date, therefore I have to write. Mm-hmm. 8,000 words a day for the next 2 weeks.
And then you cry and stop.
Then you have a little cry. Then you get your worry blanket and you wrap it around you.
Another cup of coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. Another cup of coffee.
Yeah. So with word counts now, you were just mentioning you have deadlines now, of course, which helps. Sort of helps.
It's a structure.
Mm. So what did you do before you had a deadline? How did you get that first book written?
Ooh, that's a good question. And actually, it's quite long ago now, so
you can't remember. It's a blur.
I think it was. I'd left my job. I'd got made redundant. And that was a bit of a, it was a bit of a dark time because I was processing that in my head as well. And I was at home with my kids who were very little. And I didn't always find that easy. I really thought I would fly with the maternal thing, but it was much harder than I thought, partly because I felt like there was a bit of my brain that was sort of starting to fester a little bit and not get used. So I think that drove me because I thought I want to keep my brain ticking off. I want to have some kind of creative output. I think that was what it was for me. So that drove me on, and I used to just fit it around there, like my daughter going to preschool and my son having a nap and, you know, all those things. I used to fit it around that. And I think I just thought, I want to see if I can do this. Can I do this? This would be a really lovely career. Be a writer. Yeah, let's do this. Let's try this for a bit. And it was hard, but I actually really enjoyed writing that book. Because there was no pressure of thinking anybody's ever going to read it. Mm-hmm. And then people read it.
And
that's a whole new, that's a whole different ball game.
Were you very nervous before it came out?
Yes, incredibly. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, I was too. Terrifying.
Don't put that out there.
Yes.
I don't want anyone reading it, please.
Yeah. How did you find that? Was it a positive experience?
It was, you know, for the most part, it was a wholly positive experience.
Oh, great.
It was just brilliant. It was just, everybody was so, you know what it's like? You know what this is like. Everybody's so happy for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you've had a baby, actually.
Yes.
You get loads of cards and flowers and there's champagne and there's, and you're a little bit tired as well. So it's similar. And then you start to get reviews and feedback and that's lovely. And then it got picked up, not quite perfect, got picked up for a promotion, summer promotion. And then everything went a bit weird because it started to really go up the bestseller charts.
Uh-huh.
And it got to sort of in the top 500 and we're thinking, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And then it carried on and top 100 and so on. And that was just so, I thought this isn't supposed to be happening, you know, but I think, the publisher had got the package so right. The cover was just gorgeous and really eye-catching, and it really stood out, and it was on the landing page as well. So it just, and it had a good price as well, so people were clicking and buying. So then I had, you know, lots, and then reviews started to come in, some good, some bad, but mostly a good,
mostly very
feeling.
Good.
And that was just amazing, you know, and then it sort of took off. And it was a strange but lovely summer. And then it had another burst in the autumn as well.
Oh, that's nice.
So yeah, it was great. It was a wholly positive experience.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah. We're so lucky.
We are lucky as well. I hope that doesn't sound like smug, but it was great. It's very lucky. And I think if the package is right, if you get a little bit of luck behind you and people start to buy it and like it and review it, then you, and that was my first book as well. So people should take heart from that. You can do it with your first book.
Absolutely.
And you have to write more.
Yes. I was going to say, you can do it even if you're terrified.
Yes,
then you have to do it again. So speaking of doing it again, you've just finished editing a book because This interview, we're speaking much earlier, but this interview will actually be going out the week before your new book is published. So that's exciting. So future Annie, how do you feel?
Well, in the future, I will be a much more confident person.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
As a result of this podcast.
Wonderful.
No, it's very exciting. It's the third published book. Yeah, it's brilliant. I did feel more confident with this book. I did really start to feel that I understood the writing process a bit more, understood how to structure a good story. Mm-hmm. And I really like Cat Nightingale. I wanted to write about a character who was just went against everything was different to me, very, very different. Mm-hmm. And I thought, women today, there's a lot of pressure on women to have children. And I thought, What about creating this character who just doesn't want to have children. And she's cool with that. And that is her life. And that she's made up her mind and she thinks she's sorted. And then just giving her a slightly different angle to look at her life with, which is two small children. You know, they do give you they're not small, but they are children. So yeah, I really enjoyed spending a year with her. I kind of miss her now, actually. She's a nice cat. I'd like to go out and drink a couple of mojitos with her, actually.
That's an excellent sign.
Yes, that's good, isn't it? Because I don't know if you always feel like that about your characters.
No, I generally am sick of the book completely by the end.
By the end of it, by the time you do get to that stage where you think, I don't want to read this again. Mm. I don't want to read this book again.
But I know what you mean, though, about the characters. You do kind of miss them a little bit because I'll be doing some rewrites next month, I think, on a book that I finished last year. And I guess maybe because I've had a break as well, I'm kind of looking forward. No, yeah. I am. I'm looking forward to sort of getting back in touch with those characters again. Be like, hi, guys.
Nice. Yeah, it is like having a reunion. That is a nice thing to do.
I really like the fish out of water kind of sound to the new book. You know, I like that sort of story, you know, putting someone out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, and which giving kind them of a different... put me out of my comfort zone as well, because I had to learn a bit about PR and that world. You know, I ended up following quite a lot of famous people and PR people to see how their world worked, you know, on Twitter and talked to a few people about what that was like. So that was quite interesting as well, you know.
The internet's so amazing for research, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, it is. Lucky.
I mean, you almost don't need to leave the house, but you probably should.
Yeah, it's overrated.
It is getting out of your pyjamas.
Yeah.
Getting out of the writer's onesie is overrated.
Yeah, we're just talking to each other now in our slankets.
Yes, we're in our slankets, yes. Very nice.
But you were saying that you feel that you're starting to get a little bit more knowledge or confidence within the sort of process of writing and structuring a story. Is that purely from the practice of writing a few books now, or are there any resources that you'd recommend? Is there any sort of courses you've taken or books on structure that you've found particularly helpful?
Well, in terms of structure, I did read a novel in a year.
Okay. Doughty? And she wrote Apple Tree Yard, is that right?
Yes, she did.
Which was really good. Mm.
She's an amazing writer in her own right as well. So if anybody knows about how to structure a novel, it will be her. And I did use that because there are lots of useful exercises in that when I first started. And sometimes I dip into that to give me a little bit of, how do you do that again? Should I try that? But one book that I try to read before the start of every novel, is On Writing by Stephen King.
I love that book.
It's such a good book. And it's actually a really good book even if you're not a writer.
Absolutely.
Because it's such an insight into that craft. And he's the master.
I mean, he is, yeah.
He is the master. And actually I said to my editor once, should I do a course? Should I try and do, you know, because I think you're always learning and should never close your mind to anything. And so she said, you've read On Writing, haven't you? And I said, yes. And she's, that's basically what you need.
Yes.
Just follow that.
So true.
Do what
so
he
true.
Says. Mm. Yeah. So I do, I read that and, because you forget, you know. Mm.
And do you plan, do you outline before you write or?
I try to a little bit because I feel like I should. But
okay.
But that's another confidence thing, because I've spoken to a few people and a few, actually a few other Korean authors, and I said, do you plan? And some people plan and some people just go with it.
Yeah, I don't
at all. You just go with it, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I can't plan. I've tried. I have tried and tried and tried, and I just can't do it.
No.
I've tried spider diagrams. I've tried mind maps. I've tried anything you care to suggest. I've tried, because planning just seems to me like something that proper writers do, and
yes, definitely.
and that it would also maybe help streamline my process a little bit.
Yes.
And I just cannot do it. It makes me miserable and nothing happens. I can't, yeah, my brain just stops.
Yes.
But if I open a blank document and just start typing.
But also your publisher often wants to know, don't they?
Yes.
Before they agree to publish it, they tend to, weirdly, they want to know what you're going to write.
No, it's odd.
It's very odd. Very narrow. No, but it is, I know. Well, I find that very inspiring that you do that. I think I might do that with my next book. I know roughly what it's got to be.
And then phone me and shout at me.
When we finish, I'm going to start.
Oh, excellent. And the only thing I would say is that I do have to do, you know, my first draft so bad it's a zero draft, and then I have to knock that into something readable, and then that's a first draft, really. And so I think I do, and I think I impose my structure and my outlining and things really happens after I've got... I think it's because I just need to spew out all the stuff about the characters and all the stuff that's in my subconscious. And
that's
apply.
Brilliant.
Ooh, I
don't
know.
That's what Peter Woodhouse used to do.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I feel fantastic now.
Let's do what he does.
Yes.
He used to write everything out in great long form. And
okay.
Then, and barely used half of it, you know.
Yeah, that there's a lot of throwing away. I was going to say, it's not a very efficient process, so...
I don't know. I think it's kind of... Creative processes aren't sort of one thing or the other, are they?
No,
they are what
no,
works
so true.
For you. And you have to find that thing. And I'm kind of still looking for it. I am very inspired by people who say, well, just go for it. I think, okay, I will do that then. I do like to have a document that says, this is my novel synopsis, chapter 1 to whatever, 25.
Mm-hmm.
And chapter 1 might have some stuff in it. And
okay.
There'll be the odd word. And then it's just a blank page. And I think I'll just fill that in as I go along.
Oh, that I can outline if that's outlining.
That's it. Isn't it? Simple as that.
But what I like is, and I think people who outline get this as well, because I don't think anyone really rigidly sticks to their outlines. Things, you know, the process is free for and expect things to happen. But the last first draft that I just finished, halfway through, I suddenly discovered that someone who I thought was a good character was actually the antagonist. And I had no idea. It was very exciting, you know.
That is exciting.
So that's quite
fun.
I love
that when your book tells you what you need to do, or your character tells
you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Or I'll find that I'll finish a book and then there'll be all these little hints in the first draft that I didn't realise I'd put in there. My subconscious is just cleverer than I am.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Which I like.
Let your subconscious write it.
Yes. Well, I do try. I try to be as asleep as possible when I write.
I guess if you write something like crime fiction, I mean, that would be well beyond my skill set. You've got to maybe...
Well, you see, I always thought that, and I think that's largely true. I think a lot of crime and thriller writers do plot very carefully. However, Ian Rankin is on record as saying that he never knows... He doesn't plan.
And he
has general ideas for his stories, of course, and he, you know, gets research. He does research and gets inspiration from real life stories and so on. But he said he was writing one book and he said he didn't know who the killer was.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You know, that sort of thing. And I think, wow.
I think I saw a program where he was talking about that. And he and his wife would say to him, are you on page 60 by any chance? Because every time he hits page 60, he just goes really, he's very grumpy and he gets really fed up and he has to go for long walks. And she can always tell.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes. And he has quite a strict editor as well.
Okay.
Who makes him rewrite things. And he doesn't always like what she says, but he does it anyway because he knows she knows how to make a good book.
Yeah.
always listen to your editor.
Absolutely. You learn so much through the editing process.
You definitely do.
So is there a part of the process that, or a stage of writing a book that you're likely to have to take long walks and your husband's going to say, you're grumpy?
Why are you doing that? I think the revisions part, when I get my revisions through, I know I need to open the document probably early in the morning, then close it. I open it, read it, have a little panic, close it, and then leave it for a day and then read it properly.
Yeah.
And just tell myself that I'm going through a process and it's okay. Because I'm the kind of person, actually, in life, I want to solve. If somebody comes with a problem, I say, oh my goodness, I've got to solve this for you immediately. I've got to give you the solution straight away. And I'm like that with writing. I think I've got to solve this. I've got to rewrite this, and I've got to do it today, now, this morning. And actually, I've learned that I need to give myself time and step back and let it evolve. And it will work itself out if I let it, you know. Don't panic. To tell myself.
I think I might have to write that above my computer. Don't panic. Actually, again, sorry, the audience can't see this, obviously, but I'm just going to show you. Oh, I don't know if you can see this, but I have a little bird here. I've written a quote here that says, it always seems impossible until it's done, which I had when I was editing, when I just thought.
That's brilliant.
So my little...
I might have to write that down and put that on a post-it note up
that's
here.
That's a good one.
That is a really good one.
I like a good quote.
I do too. I'm a sucker for a good quote. As anyone who follows me on Twitter knows, there's a lot of Dorothy Parker and some
brilliant quotes
on my line.
Well, I've just noticed we're actually coming up on the hour, and so I'm taking all of your time. It's just so nice to speak to you. I could talk to you all afternoon, but I better not take all your writing time. So I just wanted to ask you quickly, what advice would you give to somebody who is looking to follow in your footsteps?
Well, I would say keep going. You know, keep going. Like I say, if someone's told you you can write, or I'd say if at least three people have told you that you can write and they've enjoyed your stories, then keep going.
That's great. Thank you. And what are you working on at the moment, or what's next for you?
Well, I'm kind of in full-on pre-planning mode for Life or Something Like It. And I'm working with Karina on that. And there's going to be lots of activity on Twitter and on my website and Facebook and all around that, around publication.
That's exciting, but time-consuming, isn't it?
I'm writing lots of blog posts because I now blog quite regularly. I tried to do a blog a week. That was one of my New Year's resolutions for my website. And I do intend to drink champagne on the 13th of July.
Excellent.
I like to do it every publication day. I think that's very important for me. But then beyond that, beyond the next book, I am actually starting work on researching my next, it's going to be a series, actually. I haven't told anyone this yet, so this is
exclusive.
Worried writer exclusive.
Excellent, thank you very much.
But I can't tell you much about it because don't know myself. But at the moment, I'm looking, I think it's going to be a series of three books. And I'll tell you more when I know more about it. Does that sound suitably mysterious?
It does. I like that. Very good.
So I'm going to crack on with that.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes, I've got to meet up with my editor to talk about that later this month. So that's very exciting.
That is. Yes. And I'll just wrap up with finding out where listeners can go to know more about you and your books. Where's the best place to find you online?
Well, I have a website, annielyons.com, but I'm also on Facebook.
Okay.
And Twitter.
What's your Twitter handle?
It's @1AnnieLyons.
Okie doke. Well, yes. I will put the links in the show notes. Head there and click, and also links to Annie's brand new, soon to be coming out book.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! But thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been really lovely to speak to you.
Yeah, you treated me lovely. It didn't feel like a, you know, it's felt like a just a lovely chat.
Hour.
Enjoyed it. Can we do it every week?
I lured you into a sense of security with my slanket.
You did. You can lure me anywhere with a slanket.
Oh, writers, so true. Okay, then. Thank you so much, Annie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. For show notes and links, head to worriedwriter.com. If you'd like to connect, find me on Twitter at Sarah R. Painter or use the hashtag worriedwriter. See you next time.